educating the masses with God's Word, Truth, and Facts. Wade Through the Swamp with Rick on For God and Country. The Fourth Amendment. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath, affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Welcome to For God and Country. Back again after some technical difficulties and a vacation, much needed vacation. Technical difficulties still aren't completely cleared up, but I'm going to record anyway because the show must go on. So forgive me if we ramble or if there's large spaces in between. Again, I'm still working out all the bugs, but today we have... Are we being spied on? This is just another in-depth into our Fourth Amendment episodes. You know, the one about being secure in your papers, your privacy, that sort of thing. Today, we have this piece from The Guardian about Genesis. What is Genesis? Do we know? Well, I'm going to have several different articles today about the Genesis Project. The Genesis Project seems to be a program that gets downloaded onto your phone, and whoever's in control can look in at everything, can track your every move. They can look at anything on your phone, and you have no control over it. Is this system on your phone already? We don't know, because you don't even have to click on a link to get it. They just send you an email, and guess what? It's in your phone. In this particular article from The Guardian, it's from India, but I can't pronounce the man's name, so I'm not even going to try. We're going to have several articles on just this particular subject today, so bear with me. All right, for the piece. This is no ordinary spying. Our most intimate cells are now exposed by Arundhata Roy. Pegasus Project shows we could all be soon ruled by states that know everything about us, while we know less and less about them. Here in India, the summer of dying is quickly morphing into what looks like the city summer of spying. Second wave of coronavirus has retreated after leaving an estimated 4 million Indians dead. The official government figure for the number of deaths is a tenth of that, 400,000. Even the smoke dwindled in the crematoriums and earth-settled graveyards. Gigantic hoarding appeared in the streets, saying, "Thank you, Mon Jai, for the free vaccine." So it looks like where did my article go? Again, with the technical difficulties. Get down. From the article, it looks like Amnesty International to break an extraordinary story about global surveillance on a massive scale. It appears in these reports, alongside a group of countries whose governments appear to have bought Pegasus spyware developed by NSO Group, an Israeli surveillance firm. NSO, for its part, has said that it sells its technology only to governments that have been vetted for the human rights records and undertake it to use only for purposes of national security and to track terrorists and criminals. The other countries that seem to have passed NSO's human rights test include Rwanda, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, AUE, Mexico. Who exactly has agreed to the definition of terrorists and criminals? This is simply up to NSO and its clients. Other than the exorbitant amount of cost of spyware, which runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars per phone, the NSO charges an annual system maintenance fee of 17%. The total cost of the program, there has to be something treasonous about the foreign corporation servicing and maintaining a spy network that is monitoring our country's private citizens' phone on behalf of the country's government. The investigating team examined a leaked list of 50,000 phone numbers. Analysts show more than 1,000 of these were selected by a client of NSO of India. Whether or not a number has been successfully hacked or subject to an attempted hacking can only be determined by the phones if the phones are submitted for forensic examination in India. Several of those that have been examined have been found to have been infected with the Pegasus spyware. The leaked list includes phone numbers of opposition party lawyers, intellectuals, businessmen, non-compliant officials of India, election commission, non-compliant senior intelligence officers, cabinet members and their families, foreign diplomats, even the prime minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan. Indian government spokespeople have denounced the list as fake. Close watchers of the Indian politics would know that even a skilled and knowledgeable watcher's fiction would not be able to construct such an apt, credible list of those in the ruling party considers to be of interest of inimplicable to its political project. So, ladies and gentlemen, there's just one story out of India about this Pegasus. So, what is Pegasus? And looks like in Mexico, in March 2017, a 38-year-old freelance reporter named Celico Pineda Brito was shot dead in Altamirano, a town in southern Mexican region of Tierra Caliente. The battleground organized crime factions. His phone vanished from the crime scene. A few weeks later, a number contacted that phone had been selected for possible surveillance and targeted by a client of the spyware company NSO Group. The Guardian's Nina Lacanani tells Michael Safi that the story is illustrative of the dangers faced by journalists in Mexico. The mobile numbers of more than 15,000 Mexicans, including judges, politicians, activists, teachers, appear in the data leak of possible surveillance targets. Included in that are at least 50 people linked to Mexico's president and his wife, children, aides, and doctor. Appearing on the leaked list does not mean the number was attacked or the infection was attempted. And the NSO insists its database has no relevance to the company. Pegasus Project has been reported by Stephanie Kirkgassner in Washington, Paul Lewis, David Pegg, and Dan Sabak, and Sam Coulter in London, Nina Lekmahani in Mexico City, Sean Walker in Budapest, Angelique Christofanis in Paris, and Martin Hodgins in New York, and Michael Safi. So far, that's quite a large list, and we're not even into the United States yet. Looks like it's also been used in Rwanda. You just heard For God and Country with Rick Lawson. Stay tuned, more to come. Sorry about the technical glitches, ladies and gentlemen, I'm still working on it. Pegasus Project has raised new concerns about how the Israeli firm, which is a world leader in the niche surveillance market, in 2019, when NSO Group was facing intense scrutiny, new investors in the Israeli surveillance company were on PR offense to reassure human rights groups. In exchange for the public letters, in 2019, they told Amnesty International and other activists that they would do whatever is necessary to ensure NSO's weapons-grade software would only be used to fight crime and terrorism. But the claim appears to be hollow. unknown to activists, NSO would later hatch a deal that would help a long-time government client with an awful human rights record. Dubai, the monarchy in the United Arab Emirates, wanted NSO to give permission to expand its potential use of spyware so it could target mobile phones in the UK. It needed to do so, it argued, to track down drug dealers using foreign SIM cards to evade surveillance. Insiders in the company were hesitant of a person familiar to the matter said it was a risky proposition given the track record of customers such as AUE in 2016 had tried to use NSO spyware to hack the phone of one of the most outspoken and respected Emirati human rights activist, Aman Mansour. He was imprisoned by the Emirati authorities 1 year later and is still in jail. But the Guardian has been told that the NSO committee reviewing the deal agreed to Dubai's request. Potentially, it meant that authorities in Dubai would be able to bypass the privacy and anti-hacking laws that would usually protect individuals living in democracies from being spied on without a warrant, having their phones hacked by a foreign government. Some of the people with whom authorities showed a possible interest leaked records now to indicate were not drug dealers at all. They were human rights activists and dissidents living in exile. NSO's signature software, Pegasus, Dubai's rulers could seek to infiltrate any mobile phone they wanted in the UK, eavesdrop on calls, look at photos, read text messages, and even turn on a phone's microphone and camera remotely. In most cases, they could do it without leaving a digital fingerprint. This is the power of the NSO spyware. And why countries from Mexico to Saudi Arabia, Rwanda, India appear to have been willing to pay a high price for its capabilities. This week, the Pegasus Project, a media collaboration that included The Guardian, was coordinated by the French media group Forbidden Stories, revealed new allegations of abuse when leaked the records showing some phone numbers of journalists, dissidents, and political activists. So, are you on their list? The question is, are you someone that, do you fight against our government? Do you refuse to wear masks? Are you arguing for truth and justice? If you are doing any of those things, you probably are on their list. I would not be surprised if I am, because I believe I'm probably on every list. Another piece, how a powerful Catholic priest outed his Grindr app data may be an omen of more to come. So this priest, who was apparently gay, was not used by Pegasus, but used by his app. And it showed his all of his travels. So it showed where he checked in. It showed everywhere he went. Monsignor Jeffrey Beryl, former General Secretary of the U.S. Bishops' Conference, announced his resignation Thursday after the Pillar found evidence the priest engaged in serial sexual misconduct while he held critical oversight role in the Catholic Church's response to the recent spate of sex abuse cases and misconduct scandals. It's with great sadness that I inform you Jeffrey Beryl has resigned as of General Secretary of the Conference. Archbishop Jose Gomez wrote in July 20th memo to U.S. bishops. On Monday, we became aware of an impending media reports alleging possible improper behavior by Beryl, which was shared with us, but did not include allegations of misconduct with minors. However, in order to avoid becoming a distraction to the operation of the ongoing work of the conference, Beryl has resigned effective immediately, Gomez added. The memo came after the USCCB and Burrell were contacted by the Pillar regarding evidence of a pattern of sexual misconduct on Burrell's part. Burrell did not respond to questions from the Pillar before his resignation was announced by bishops. You just heard For God and Country with Rick Lawson. Stay tuned, more to come. So there's, looks like, four different stories of technology being used to spy on American citizens. Got another one. The NSA is confirmed to have unmasked Tucker Carlson in surveilled communications, I spoke about on my last episode, where Tucker Carlson was being spied on by the NSA. And the NSA denied initially spying on Tucker, but it was proven unequivocally that the only person that could have possibly have read this man's emails were the man himself and the man he sent them to, and the NSA seemed to have all of his information. Were they using Pegasus? We don't know. We don't know if they were using FOIA warrants. Well, in order to use a FOIA warrant, any U.S. citizen being spied on, their name is not to be released. That's against the law, not without a warrant, because FOIA is a foreign information warrant that's going against foreign nationals. The NSA in the article, hang on, I gotta give credit where credit's due. Sorry, back with the technical glitches, boys and girls. Sorry about that. In the piece of American News, there's no name attached to it, so I don't have to give credit. I would love to give credit of any articles being written, looks like by Nick Monroe in the Postmillennial. NSA review confirms Tucker Carlson was unmasked in communications between two third parties amidst a whistleblower uproar about the Fox host being monitored. That happened at the end of last month. According to the record, two sources familiar with the matter told them that the NSA found no evidence of Tucker Carlson targeting directly in an effort to sabotage the show. They also ruled out an incidental collection, which happens whenever someone gets in touch with a foreign intelligence target being monitored by the NSA. However, what they do say happened was that Tucker Carlson's name was unmasked in communications between two third parties. The records reporting establishment, the government establishes that government officials thought it was pertinent to identify the Fox News host by name. This is on the 29th of last month. The NSA made a public statement denying specifically that they ever monitored Tucker's electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take the show off the air. It's that specific game of semantics and the intent first brought forward by Tucker Carlson that the record is trying to dispel. Confirms Tucker Carlson being unmasked. A Fox News spokesperson called the NSA's original statement deceitful. For the NSA to unmask Tucker Carlson or any journalist attempting to secure a newsworthy interview, is entirely unacceptable. It raises serious questions about their activities as well as their original denial, which was wildly misleading. Why are they spying on American citizens anyway? We are protected by the Fourth Amendment. Spying is completely and totally illegal without a warrant. And I find it disgraceful. Completely and totally disgraceful. I get it. We have to monitor foreign dignitaries. We have to monitor criminals far and wide. But we cannot be spying on American citizens who've done nothing wrong. And why are we unmasking their names? That has to be done by some very high, powerful people like the director of the NSA or the president or vice president of the United States. And it looks like The government's also monitoring our social media. An article and media post on Publishers Daily by Ray Schultz. Journalists are under increased pressure by governments to take down content, judging by Twitter's transparency report for the second half of 2020. Twitter reports that 199 verified journalists and news organizations received 361 legal demands and a 26% increase over the prior six-month period, including were 128 demands from India, 108 from Turkey, 52 from Pakistan, and 28 from Russia. In addition, journalists outlets reported 16 demands from Brazil, from New Mexico, 9 from New Mexico, 9 from Thailand, and 3 from Ireland, 2 from France, 2 from Colombia, and 2 from Venezuela. Why is the government demanding that Twitter, Facebook, and others monitor our uses, our use of the of their technology? I don't understand it. That doesn't make any sense to me. The government can't do it themselves, so they call on big tech to do it for them. Just the other day, the secretary of the press secretary, Psaki, made it clear that the government is working with social media to monitor and take down posts that they feel or they deem are untrue. The question is, who decides whether it's a true or not? I don't feel that the government has any business telling private companies what they should or should not be doing. Looks like back in October, the FBI contacted the CEO of Facebook, and they told him that if a large trove of documents came in about Hunter Biden, that it was going to be Russian disinformation. Well, it turned out that trove that was originally denied by Facebook, Twitter, and others most certainly was true. Now, did they get that from the Pegasus program? Is that how they found out that that information was coming out? How do we know? Is there any way possible that we could know? I believe that they have been. I believe the Pegasus is all over the place. It's infected all of our phones just like the coronavirus. Moving on. Matt Ridley from Matt Ridley Online blog stated virulent does not mean infectious. Respiratory viruses tend to evolve and be more transmittable but less virulent. Articles also claim that the Delta variant is more virulent, i.e., citing the spread of the more virulent Delta coronavirus variant in the United Kingdom. Earlier in the year, the same was said about the Alpha variant. It was more virulent. This was untrue. Virulent means harmful, not infectious. If anything, the evidence suggests that the Delta variant may be less dangerous, but more transmittable or infectious. Although it's hard to be sure if this is true, given the vulnerability of old and now protected by the vaccines. The suggestion that the Indian variant is more pathogenic needs to be taken with a big dose of salt. The same was initially suggested for the Kent variant, but was later shown not to be true, writes Professor Ian Jones. Respiratory viruses tend to evolve more transmissible and less dangerous. They do better if you go out and about and meeting people. This is not true of insect-borne and water-borne infections, which don't care how sick you are. Water infects water or insects. Do the going about for you. That's why there are 200 kinds of common cold, of which is virulent, including OC43 coronavirus that is probably caused by the pandemic in 1889, but is now fairly mild and common cold. But there is one situation which respiratory viruses will stay dangerous or become even more so, that if mild cases meet fewer people than the more severe ones. This appears to be what happened in 1918. Paul Edwin argued, when severe flu cases were evacuated from the front line to a series of staging posts, field hospitals, and trains, while mild cases slept it off in the dugout. I think this is what happened last year when mild cases of COVID-19 stayed locked down in their home while severe cases went to the hospital, where many cases of the virus were acquired in hospital. In other words, the lockdowns, whether necessary or not, probably delayed the evolution of the virus into a milder form. That is now happening and is our least worst opinion given to eradication, given eradication is impossible, and the virus may become more transmissible in response to vaccinations. In general, there is not nearly enough thinking along these lines, the lines of Darwinian medicine, within the medical establishment, by Randy Ness, has long argued, You just heard For God and Country with Rick Lawson. Stay tuned, more to come. So did we make the virus worse by locking down all of our cities and our towns and our facilities? I think we probably did. In other news, looks like the Washington Times, I use it for toilet paper, but, you know, to each his own. I still report when it reports information. Stupid glitches. Enforcement actions. Twitter suspends Marjorie Taylor Greene for violating rules. Yet another conservative to be suspended from Twitter. I have not been suspended from Twitter yet, but I have been removed from other social media sites in the past, I believe, for my political views, but that's one of the reasons I stopped using the bulk of them. I really only use Twitter now. I don't really put anything personal on there, or do I any of my own personal thoughts. I just share and I follow politics with it. Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene has run afoul of Twitter again over a COVID-19 post and drawn another suspension. The Georgia Republican's personal account violated the rules against misleading information on the pandemic. The Silicon Valley firm told multiple news outlets Monday evening. We took enforcement action on the account of @MTGreen for violations of Twitter rules, specifically COVID-19 misleading information policy, a Twitter spokesman told the New York Times. Ms. Green called the limits on her account the latest anti-free speech collusion between liberal Silicon Valley companies and the White House. These big tech companies are doing the bidding of the Biden regime to restrict our voices and prevent the spread of any messages that isn't state approved. Specifically, Mrs. Green had posted one tweet that rather forced vaccination or mask wearing. Public health authorities should help people protect their health by defeating obesity, which will protect them from COVID complications and death, and many other health problems. We should invest in health and human Not, we should invest in health, not human experimentation. In another, she said the virus is not dangerous for non-obese people and under the age of 65, referred to 6,000 vax-related deaths and many concerning side effects. The tweets in question were labeled misleading by the social media firm, which also suggested readers view other source information on the subject. So, since Twitter gets Section 230 protection, should they be deciding what we get to put on our face, on our profiles? I thought they were just a publisher. I didn't know they were a publisher. I thought they were just a message board. I thought we were the publishers. I didn't realize they got to dictate what gets put out and what doesn't. That sounds awful dangerous, and I think we need to remove their Section 230's protections altogether. Because I think it's dangerous. But then again, who am I? Alright, in other news, from the Washington Examiner, bubble children, Democrats say yes to masks and vaccines in schools. Why are we putting masks on children? They know that children don't spread the virus, and why are we demanding that they get vaccinated? Democrats continue to fall in line behind the coronavirus czar, Dr. Anthony Fauci, embracing his latest calls for masks and vaccines for children as young as 3 years old. By more than 2-1, Democrats support requiring schools to mask up and vaccinate students, according to the latest Rasmussen survey. On masks, Democrats support the requirement in schools 58-23. On vaccines, it was 56, backing a requirement to 25 not to. But in broader review, more and more people are becoming concerned about the new variant of COVID-19 and reports it's spreading fast, especially among the unvaccinated. But all of the fools that fled Texas who refused to do their job, I think, what, 7 or 8 of them now have the new variant, or have the coronavirus, and don't know if it's a new variant yet, but they have the coronavirus, and they're fully vaccinated, so obviously the vaccination doesn't work. Otherwise, they wouldn't have contracted the virus. An investor, Business Daily, TP Tip, found a poll of 1,400, found that 67% are concerned the new variants will worsen the coronavirus situation in the nation after months of crisis is leveling off. The support for masks and vaccines for students by Democrats, in opposition to the overall view, Rasmussen said it was likely voters, 42-39 margin, did not support requiring masks. By a similar margin, 45-39 say they don't support requiring masks for school children. And Republicans, by a margin of similar to Democrats, do not support requiring masks or vaccines, said Rasmussen. As the virus flares up, some cities are looking to require masks again. In Los Angeles County, California has led the way with the mandate this week. Also, in the crisis has crashed the Tokyo Olympics, where fans are banned from some Team USA members have been sidelined due to exposure. We all know viruses are dangerous. We all know viruses can be deadly. But we also know what this virus is capable of. I don't understand why we are continually mandating masks and shutdowns. Looks like St. Louis County in Missouri has re-implemented their mandate, but their attorney general has filed a lawsuit demanding that they rethink their decisions. And I pray and hope that he wins, because they don't have the authority to continue to mandate anything. None of these governors or city officials have any have the authority to mandate anybody do anything. This is a free country. This is not Iran. This is not Iraq. This is not the North Korea. This week's liberal stream, media stream, features Washington Post columnists telling it like it is. Liberal advocacy in the media is the correct bias. On CNN's reliable sources show, Perry Beacon Jr. argued the news media should move on from caring about attracting just as many Republicans as Democrats to read their new reporting, their view on their reporting. Picking up on a column last week, Bacon said the core mission of the media is to represent, is to present facts and evidence-based view of the world. But his facts, of course, overlap with the priorities of liberals, not uncommon for the Washington Post columnists who are giving more freedom to in their work. For example, he said, we in the media are biased from the terms we support vaccines. We in the media hire LGBTQIAXYZ because nobody knows what they're going to add tomorrow. There's more confusion there than a Three Stooges convention. We are biased against bans against trans and gay people. But yet they'll ban Republicans all day long because they are tyrants. The mainstream media is an absolute joke. So what the hell happened to Durham? DOJ agrees that Durham report should be released to the public when complete. The Biden Department of Justice made a statement in response to inquiries from Senators Chuck Grassley and Senator Ron Johnson. Whatever happened to it? Did we know? The Durham report was a special counsel order that John Durham investigate the Russia collusion hoax and who and what and where happened, how the government got a hold of their information, and who exactly pushed the Russia hoax. GOP Senators Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin requested answers from Attorney General Merrick Garland regarding the special counsel's Durham investigation. The Washington Examiner reported in a letter to the senators, Deputy Assistant Attorney General Joe Gaeta wrote that he could not comment on Durham's own ongoing investigations or its status. However, with regard to Barr's October 2020 special counsel order, which he said special counsel to the maximum extent possible and consistent within the law and policies and practice of the Department of Justice, shall submit to the Attorney General's final report and such intern reports he deems appropriate and off in a form that will permit public dissemination, Gaeta wrote. The department agrees with this statement. Durham was made special counsel by Barr in October 2020 during investigation into the Trump-Russia probe, which began in 2019. So what the heck is going on with that, huh? Why on earth have we not heard anything from him? I'm so confused as to why, where his investigation has gone. Does anybody know? Does anybody hear anything from Durham? I think it's unacceptable. There's no reason that it should take nearly that long to release this investigative report. So we appreciate you. Thanks for listening. I know it's a shorter show today, but I have so many technical difficulties. It's going to take forever to edit this information. So bear with me. I'm still working through. Thanks for listening and have a good day. Thanks for listening to For God and Country. Stay tuned. More to come.